Tune in for an exclusive and permanent deal just for you. Get ready to immerse yourself in nature with an ongoing offer of 20% off all Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds, exclusively designed for our valued podcast listeners. When you head over to homegrowncannabisco.com and use code COUGH20 at checkout, that's COUGH20. It's time to embrace the power of nature and embark on a growing experience like no other. Welcome back, growers and green thumbs, to your favorite corner of compassion and cannabis cultivation. Grow weed at home. I'm your leaf-loving host, Kyle Cushman, thrilled to guide you through another session of sage advice and heartfelt horticulture. But before we dig in, let's look back at last week's episode. We had the legendary Jim Belushi from Belushi's Farm, who shared his journey from the stage to the soil, his work in the community, and his mission to heal with the power of the plant. Jim's passion for cannabis and its potential to transform lives really hit home for all of us. Now today builds beautifully on that foundation of care and quality. We're going deep into the garden of mindful cultivation with a very special guest. He blends ancient wisdom with organic growth, teaching us that how we tend our plants is a reflection of how we tend our own inner gardens. Folks, meet John Bays, the heart and soul behind Green Bodhi. John's not just a grower, he's a philosopher who believes in intentional horticulture, a process that marries the serenity of Buddhist teachings with the practice of cultivating cannabis. For over 20 years, John's hands have been in the earth and his voice in the halls of power, pushing for policies that respect our right to grow and heal with cannabis. He's been instrumental in legal transformations, with his influence reaching from the open fields of Oregon to the intricate corridors of Capitol Hill. John's legacy includes spearheading the country's first certified organic dispensary and shaping pivotal legislation, demonstrating an unwavering dedication to plant freedom and patients' rights. And let's not forget that with John, it's never just about the harvest, it's about the journey. Every seed planted is a silent view of intention, adding a layer of depth to the already profound act of cultivation. So gear up for a trip through the essence of what it means to grow, not just in size, but in spirit. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or just curious about the connection between your consciousness and your cannabis, this episode is for you. We're about to uncover how every leaf, stem, and flower can be infused with a mindful practice that elevates our craft. Lean in as we weave through the discussions on organic excellence, horticultural ethics, and the philosophies that can transform our relationship with nature. Today is about more than yield, it's about the yield of our intentions. So sit back, relax, and ready your minds for growth in all its forms. It's time to plant seeds of wisdom, cultivate compassion, and harvest enlightenment. Welcome John Bays to Grow Weed at Home. Let's get elevated, let's get educated, and let's do this together. Mr. Green Bodhi, where did the name come from?
That's so funny. Basically, it was from my first teacher, who I met at the first Amazonian Shamanic Conference down in Iquitos, Peru. I think it was 2002, 2003. I can't really remember. You know how after a couple decades go by, the exact year kind of fades a little bit. But he's kind of crazy wisdom, path of poisons, surfer, legend, freak, you know, that basically utilizes all the different plants, you know, to enlighten our own mind. So basically to, you know, I call it the path of poisons, but really it's all the wisdom plants and utilizing these plants to open these certain gates of awareness in our mind and utilizing those teachings to evolve and enhance our own experience. So hence green, the plants, Bodhi, the enlightenment that arises from those plants, you know.
You are a deep fella, and it's one of the things I both admire and like about you, you know, because I'm a dude of substance as well.
As for sure that.
And I didn't mean to jump right into that, but that was a really nice answer that you give to the listeners there to start you off on learning a little bit about, you know, how deep this plant goes for you. And that does bring me to my first question. We'll get over all the pleasantries and how long it's been since I've seen you. I normally do and everything. You have a title that you use called intentional horticulture, and that really caught my eye. And I'm curious what you, you know, what that means, but also, you know, is that something that you kind of coined, or did that, was that brought to you as well?
No, I actually coined that term, and actually I have it trademarked even, not to be a
weirdo. That's super cool.
But like, you know, if you look back even on Instagram, the first post that will be tagged with intentional horticulture will be from me. But basically, you know, my first teacher I was talking about, Armando Munoz, goes by Sare Tupac Huiracocha, is his shamanic name, but he ain't no shaman, as he would say. But he is very special teacher that's worked with a lot of really interesting people, whether it be Kelly Slater, you know, 11-time world champion surfer, Sonny Garcia, Greg Long, you know, and Greg Long died out at Cortez Banks surfing there. He went to Armando to have ayahuasca with, kind of reset his mind. He worked with the producers of The Matrix. He's been a crazy wisdom yogi for a minute, and we connected in Peru at that conference I mentioned earlier. And you know, when I was there, I was looking for a teacher because I was told by this lady that I'd find my first teacher in Peru. So I went down to this shamanic conference because ayahuasca was a big thing. And what I was reading on Arrowhead's vault is that ayahuasca was a thing that was going to kill you. It was going to show you your death. It was, you can have these kind of, this experience. And I was
that
at
could
a time
happen
in my
too,
life.
But it might be something you needed to see, I guess.
It was at a time in my life where I really wanted to evolve and find my way. And you know, like I told my friend, another friend of mine was like, oh, I want to be a teacher, you know, in my early 20s. He's all, what the fuck are you going to teach? You know, and I was just like, you're right, I guess, you know, what am I going to teach? But then.
But you had that feeling in your heart, though.
For sure. And the plant was always a part of that and really showing me, you know, and in my younger years, I was quite aggressive. I was, you know, half Korean, half white, moving around every 2 years. So in a time when racism wasn't really a focal point, meaning it was okay for people to be racist and it was just a norm. It created a lot of weird tensions in my experience, moving every 2 years, having that experience with others. So I got kind of pretty aggressive and gotten a lot of fist fights and did this thing. And I kind of really, the egomania that arises from this kind of aggressive behavior was becoming a real detriment to my experience. And so what I thought is, if I can change all that and become a good person, a nice person, I always had a good heart, meaning I wanted to do all these things for the sake of helping others. But I just was confused on what that meant and what that path was going to unfold as.
I can totally relate, because it's almost like you're describing my transition from like my second crop ever that I grew with my coke dealer. I tell this story a lot. Yeah. I moved in with we were best friends, and we grew our first crop together, and we both quit coke, quit selling coke, quit all our coke friends, and embarked on this journey of supplying something to people that actually enhanced their lives.
Totally.
Then the teaching aspect came in later. The fact that I enjoyed teaching even more than I enjoyed growing, that came in later. So I really can relate to what you're talking about.
And that's kind of, you know, how it kind of started. And I was telling my teacher, this person, Armando, at this conference, you know, this is after we left the conference, because he's like, hey, man, you know, I'm here looking for the highest level ayahuasca. And at this conference, you know, it was a pretty big thing. They had about 50 different shamans there from all over the Amazon basin. Eduardo Luna was there, Dennis McKenna, you know, Terrence's brother. And, you know, as crazy as I was really full of myself at that time. And, you know, I called Alan Shoemaker, the promoter, and I said, hey, man, you know, I'm from Eugene. I'm like, they say I'm one of the best growers here. You know, I was thinking I was really special, you know, because you know how cannabis has that kind of adverse effect that makes you think you're really cool or makes you think you're really shit. You know, it can make you think a lot of things depending on your own ego flair or your own humbleness or actually
balance,
inducing those
balance,
things.
Balance is the key. But it's like balance it's tricky, right? Balance
totally.
Can be tricky, you know?
Well, the middle way, you know, that razor's edge is, it's not a very wide path. You know, I mean, hence why they call it the razor's edge. You can be on one side or the other thinking you're right in the middle, but if you're in the middle, there's no thinking about it. You know, it's a thing that's happening, you know, more purely. And so I told, you know, he's all, what are you going to do, man? What are you even here for? Are you going to be some type of, you know, hippie shaman guy in the cave doing your shamanic thing with all these, you know, or he's all, or are you going to take this relationship that you've already mastered with this plant and now master your intention, you know, master who you are, become your potential. And basically, you know, that's why this person, Armando, he utilizes quantum physics, Andean plant wisdoms, and all over global plant wisdoms and Buddhist philosophy to enhance our reality. Because from his perspective, he didn't find a more clear, direct, and unbiased methodology than the Buddhist practices. And he was seeking a lot, you know, it doesn't, you know, how in early stages of Buddhism, it's very unreligious, in my opinion. It's very much a way of life, a path-oriented thing that's based off two things, and it's compassion and wisdom. And so until the later phases, it doesn't get that religious. It's more like, okay, if you focus on love for long enough, you'll become more loving, you know? So then he, from what he found, that he found, you know, this path with the Karmakagyu lineage, which is the lineage that he was associated with and where I first came in contact with. And the blueprint was very clear and refined and, you know, offered a method that a lot of us practitioners are seeking, you know, because when I was younger, I wanted to be a youth pastor, you know, Christian oriented. But I'm like, how do I be like Jesus? You know, how do I be like this? How do I do that? How do I really actualize all that red writing in the Bible? Meaning, how do I be like that? How do I, you know, instead of focusing on the splinter in your brother's eye, examine the plank in your own? How does that become real for me? You know, and I couldn't, personally, in that kind of set, I couldn't find it. It was faith driven, and I'm not a faith driven guy. Even my teacher now, he's one of the head venerables for His Holiness the Dalai Lama's monastery, and he's really funny. He told me, he's all, hey, we've kind of outsmarted our faith, you know, meaning like through intelligence and knowledge, you want the proof. You don't want to have to believe in something that you cannot prove. Even though we all have faith, it's more of a joke, like, you know, the analytical nature of our minds have kind of deduced this faith-driven orientation, you know?
That's a good perception that, you know, we've outgrown, we've over-educated ourselves.
Well, that's the thing. It's even with when I read, you know, what interdependence is, meaning the interconnection and interrelation of all things inseparable, man, that sounds a lot like God to me. You know, even though it's described as interconnectedness, but an interdependence from a Buddhist sense, if you were to describe it from a Christian sense, it would be God, you know, meaning the non-beginning, the non-end of all things in unity, inseparable. I'm like, that sounds like, you know, things from the Bible. So it's once you start to see that, once you take out the human aspect of it, it all becomes very sameness, at least from my perspective. You know, I don't, and that's why I relate.
Not in, I totally relate, you know, and I really appreciate the deepness of your context, you know, of your conversation. I am an extremely intentional person. I like to say, everything matters. Nothing is inconsequential. Everything doesn't matter the same, obviously. But everything does matter to some degree to me.
For sure.
And that's kind of what you're saying. And so it's really cool that you found yourself a path. I almost want, you know, the first word that came to enlightenment. But that's, I'm not going to be cheesy like that. You found yourself a path to bringing your talents and your, in my eyes, your desire to be able to enlighten others. And well, you found a nexus for those things. And that's really, really interesting to me. And so, so as it relates to, you know, what's the 3-minute elevator speech to the guy, you know, to describe what the meaning of intentional horticulture means to a cannabis cultivator?
Well, it's by the relationship of this plant, utilizing that connection to do the very best we can for that is going to engage that introspection in ourself to where we're going to have to evolve. We're going to have to be less lazy. We're going to have to be more diligent. We're going to have to be more aware. We're going to have to think of all the inputs. And once we start doing that for the plant, because, you know, as we see, this plant's basically hypnotized and captured the attention of the whole earth right now. So since it's that powerful, if we can steward and foster this relationship with this plant in a way that I feel the plant will guide you to do, you will evolve in that process. So it's really this intentional horticulture is intentionally growing, intentionally acting, intentionally speaking, intentionally breathing, all for the sake of benefiting others. Because to me, that's what this plant's all about. It's about healing the earth, healing the beings on it, healing the biome, healing our hearts, healing everything is what, at least what it's shown me, because this medicine, when I was first using it, you know, selling eighths of Mexican brickweed and, you know, the deserts of California, you know, and like just, oh, if I want a free eighth or a free quarter, I got to sell 3/4. Oh, if I want a free ounce, I got to sell 3-4 ounces, you know, it's, but then you're the one rolling the joint at the party, doing the whole thing. And for me, I had social anxiety. So I used it as this kind of technique of exacerbating all these obscurations in my mind. And I didn't want to not be cool, so I couldn't react to those. So I used this vain aspect of wanting to be accepted and, you know, be cool to not react to all these mental obscurations that would arise from this plant. And it would show me myself in this way that nothing else would. Even ayahuasca, it shows you its unique, you know, expression of yourself, but it's not like cannabis does, you know, it's much different. Just, you know, with LSD, same thing. It shows you an expression of yourself, but, you know, maybe more sharp and harsh instead of more comforting and passive. But so its entanglement to our biome, in my opinion, really gets us to act a certain way, act our best or not our best, but the whole thing is we're going to want to act a certain way to accomplish what we want with this plant. And I think that desire and that drive really is the essence of what coined the term, along with, you know, me realizing that every trichome, this little wax-covered blessing pill, basically, that if I can entangle my intention and entangle the people that are working with this plant with me's intention, if they can understand that's what we're doing, and we send those, you know, just one of those trichomes, but you can imagine millions of them out into the ether to people to experience and have those good feelings. You know, I've never heard anyone say, man, your weed made me feel like shit, you know? Like when I smoked it, it tasted like shit and I felt like shit. I never heard that once yet. You know, I've always heard, wow, there's something about your herb. It makes me feel happy. I feel so good. The
you
organics
made me think
of it.
A couple
you know?
Of things. One is I'm feeling guilty because I always say, like, when I'm trimming my weed or cleaning with my wife, I'm like, you can't catch every trichome. Stop being so fussy. You can't catch it. I feel guilty about that. And then I also remember, man, you took me back to a book by Michael Pollan, The Botany of Desire, where he talks about where he muses over whether humans attach themselves to the plant or the plant attach themselves to human. And when you said that the plant has hypnotized us, that's exactly what it made me think of, that we're all just hypnotized by the plant, so for its own survival, and it's a much higher being, you know? And so, you know, I really relate to all the things you're saying, you know, maybe not in the exact same way. I don't think I've taken quite as a spiritual path as you, but I certainly can relate. And or maybe, you know, it's like, I just feel like you have a little more to draw on, a little more knowledge to draw on from the actual, like when you say the Bible, I don't have any references myself, but our desires from the very beginning to both be organic and to treat it as something important, not as something unimportant, is a commonality between us. And so, you know, you've seen things change a lot, as I have, over the last couple of decades. And without being too harsh, if that's possible, because you're such a sweet and metered character, I know you'll have no problem with this. But, you know, a little bit of like controversy is good for the shows, you know?
For sure.
And this is completely unintentional, even though I'm building it up to be this big thing. Because I'm realizing that it's kind of a big thing as I'm asking. You know, over the last 20 years, the number of people that get their cannabis from somebody that they know, meaning their dealer, you know, as opposed to the percentage of people that buy their cannabis from a store, you know, I had this conversation with Belushi last week, and you know, I come from the same place as you do, meaning long before I grew it, I was selling eighths, and I made relationships from the weed that I bought and I sold. And then later on, I started growing my own. And obviously, it got much better. And those relationships got much better. You know, in a real meaningful sense. We're laughing, and that's good. But you understand, in a real meaningful sense. And, you know, so now all the people that get their medicine that don't get to have that relationship. My question is, how much of an impact do you think that has on the possibility of connection and relationship with the plant, if any, is lost, right? You know, without that, the love, the intention that I put into growing my flowers before I pass them on to you, that's truly what I believe. You know, and this isn't a vanity thing. It's just, you know, in all these years, you know, when people come and they say, you know, Kyle, you have the best weed. Great. I'm glad it makes you happy. It doesn't need to make me feel like I'm the best grower. You may call me that, and that makes me happy too. But it's never going to make me feel like I'm the best grower. But the way I related it always was it was because of how much intention, how hard I tried.
Totally.
And I'll even add, the fact that my weed wasn't illegal. Now, what I mean is I'm in Northern California and my friends are all going, Kush, how come you're not blowing it up? How come you're only growing one room? I'm like, because I'm Kyle Cushman and they're going to come arrest me one day. And I don't need, but anyways, my weed was legal and I knew it. And that was part of the intention. It wasn't filled with this fear that when they came to my house, they were going to come and take it away. It was all of that intention that I put into it is what brought me to that. And so erase all of that, take all of that away. What impact does that have on the medicine?
Well, I think personally, you know, now that, you know, P&Ls are so important and, you know, yields are so important and most people aren't living an organic lifestyle, you know, it's just not it's not as common as we wish and desire it to be. But, you know, people like us, we've held that line for decades of really adhering to this organic input, organic lifestyle, and really trying to share that. And I think a lot of that's lost because a lot of the stuff you buy in dispensaries, it's grown with salts. People are worried about yields, THC percentages, these things. It's a lot of machine trimmed herbs. So really the hands-on experience is gone in a lot of ways. So meaning that, you know, because for me, with anyone that trimmed the herb, handled the herb, grew the herb, whatever, whoever I was teaching. Well, yeah, exactly. And so I was doing my best to really teach and inform these people that every action's important when you're trimming, when you're, you know, because we do a specific type of like flick trimming, you know, I don't ever want the heart, that resin heart of the flower to ever dissipate. I want it to always be there. So when you trim, how you trim, how long you put it at a lower humidity to get the outer crisp while the inner heart stays resinous and moist to what I feel is the correct and appropriate moisture, that's a technique in itself. So when they're flick trimming and picking every little, you know, leaf off without touching any of the hairs, any of the trichs, anything, and really just really being acutely focused, all that intention is lost in a lot of commercial herb. I'm not saying that all brands do this, but the mainstream, you know, hydro brands that are just trying to run the pattern that's been set out for them by the government or by whatever, I feel that it lacks that thing, you know, that thing that, you know, it's just like when you
I get the hate mail. I take it. You know, look, what I tell people is I don't need anybody. I don't need anybody to be like me. I'm just expressing an opinion. And so don't get burnt by it. You know, express the other side of it. If you vehemently disagree, you don't have to call me a name. It's okay. It just lowers yourself, you know, but.
Well, exactly. Just like with debate, you know, when you debate information, it's not a fight or argument. It's both people presenting the details of their position clearly and eloquently. So it's called discourse.
So let's make a little more controversy. Salts. So I've always known from the first time I switched off of it, okay, the difference in the effect, the difference in the smokeability, the difference in the effect, the negative effect on my body. It was air apparent from the first time that I didn't grow with dyed powders and move to an organic base that I just made up myself, you know, without a book, you know, before these things even came out. I mean, I'm talking way, 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 way back when they had Agway feed stores, you know? Do they still have Agway feed stores?
For sure.
Oh, okay, good.
Agway's a thing. We had.
You live in the Pac Northwest, okay? So yeah, yeah. In LA, they don't have no Agway feed stores. You know, they probably do in Cali. I'm just being silly. But so.
They do in Santa Cruz. There's one.
So you know, like, I liken it to it's the same. It's like you said, inputs consumed, inputs determine output. So, you know, I will qualify that. I do try my best. I don't even really have to try. I am mostly organic. I'm not nearly 100% organic. I'm not completely that biased. Like every once in a while I go to the store and the tomatoes that I want to look at or the piece of fruit I want to look at is it just really doesn't look good or they're overripe. And I'll go over and I'll pick up something and I'll take it home and I'll wash it really good and I'll eat it. That's what I mean by I'm not 100% organic. It's not that I don't always try. I do always try. You know, the thing with cannabis is that you're not running it through your system. You're not washing it and then running it through your system, which has all these chemicals built in your system to break things apart and break them down. You're simply combusting a bunch of chemicals that are in the tissue of the material that you're smoking, and you're combusting them and you're inhaling them into a mucous membrane, you know, that is extremely sensitive. And all these people out there are cringing, you know, because the majority of weed that's grown and smoked is grown this way. And they don't want to, you know, it's like, would you eat McDonald's every single day? There's a movie about that, right? What happens if you eat McDonald's every day for just 30 days? You saw what happens. So we know that McDonald's is low quality food. And so it's just, I liken it to that. It's like, it's not like if you smoke it once, if you're a once a day toker, if you toke twice a week, if you just toke at night, one time a day, maybe there's not quite as much of a necessity. So That's how I look at it. I mean, to you, what does the salt controversy mean to you?
Well, I kind of, you know, look at it similarly, but the way I try to eat organic all the time. But when I'm out at restaurants and, you know, I'm not going to not eat, I'm going to enjoy what they have. And when I'm at a friend's or when I'm at the monastery, they don't buy organic and stuff. And I'm not going to be like, oh no, this isn't good enough for me, even though it's good enough for all you people that have taken 240, plus vows. And, so I feel like, but what I can control, I do control. And I feel that, I'm not trying to work and promote these certain companies that basically, pretty much buy pharmaceutical salts from China or wherever. They create their own thing. And it's basically supporting these regimes that I don't agree with. And I won't ever agree with. And like you said, it's from my own experience, because I grew chem in 1998, I think, or 1999. I moved in 98, I think. I moved in with a friend. He was already doing GH, just like 65% perlite, 35%
easy peasy, just check on your reservoir once a week.
Yeah. Not even like, it's like, not even, we just filled it.
You can have multiple locations. You can have 3-4 warehouses. Just go check them once a week.
Well, so like we'd hand water even that, but I basically did that with him for two runs, I think. And so I have my experience with it, what it did to my head, what it did to my awareness, what the differences were, because we did grow a little organic patch for
you
ourselves.
You gotta live with
it. I was
it.
Really committed.
You don't smoke totally. It once. You don't take a jar, an eighth, and smoke it once and then go, there's no difference. But I guarantee when you take a jar of organic weed home, your weed, my weed, organic weed, and you put it next, that's the jar that's going to be empty first. I don't care what anybody says.
For sure. I mean, even like with, we know a lot of people that are, names in the industry that when they get jars of our herb, they'll smoke all that herb to their head, and they're not, there's no shame. There's full humility. So, my good friends, Josh and Kelly, Dragonfly Earth Medicine, they own the house next door to me. Right.
Wow.
And they were here. Yeah, no, it's just synchronistically that happened. So they were down here. They're down here, working on it, 'cause they have their spot up in BC. But I brought them a jar, and I went over there a couple of days later, and they're like, hey, we're already almost out of your weed. I mean, we have all these other jars 'cause a lot of our friends gift us herb, but we smoked all yours. And so we get it, and we're really honored more so and humbled by that aspect, because people recognize the care and attention to detail and what we put into it and our heart essence that we put into it. And I think that that's the thing that, when people are fully committed to salt reality or conventional growing, I think it's just expressions of humanity, in my opinion. Not all people are weirdos.
Just because you smoke bad weed, that doesn't make you a bad person.
No, not at all. But it definitely, you're not thinking about that aspect of reality, say. You're not thinking, maybe if I eat less of this product, I'll have less glyphosate in my system.
You can't eat Cheerios. They just came out that Cheerios has been linked to infertility.
Well, I mean, it's all coming from the glyphosate. And
so it's the same as these food companies. If you don't believe with it, look, like you said, it's different aspects of humanity. And I don't hate unless people give me a reason. I mean, you've got to be mean to me. If you're mean to me, then I have the capacity. But, we all know that we can't, these companies that control the food aisles, it's all poison. You can't eat bread in America. All the food is outlawed everywhere else in the world. And they pump it to us here. And so why would you think that the companies that are now mass producing your cannabis are any different?
Well, I think that they're not, because a lot of these people are funded by those same companies that are funding these other aspects, And so I think if we're not really thinking about that, say someone's got 1 million square feet of, canopy underneath, glass greenhouses. Where do you think that money came from to do that? Because you know, people like us, I have, you know, my little hemp, you know, medical grow that I'm, you know, working on seeds and genetics. And, you know, it's, you have certain limits. And,
I
you
get
know,
you.
It's,
we're not anti-money, you and we're not anti-money, but it's like my grandpa once said to me, he said, it's not that hard to make money in this world, but it is hard to make money and feel good about it. It's harder to make money and feel good about it, you know, and that comes with the intention. And man, this is a very deep and interesting conversation, you know. you know, and so let's switch gears a little bit. And you pioneered the nation's first fully certified organic dispensary. You know, tell me about that. I mean, first off, all I know is that cannabis is not allowed to be labeled organic. Is that something different in Oregon? And did you bring that about?
Well, it's not something different. It's still a thing that you can't even label it organic, but you can have third party certifiers that work for, you know, basically that are certified to do USDA organic, utilize those same, you know, astringent rules to basically certify your own grow. You know, there's a multitude of different ones that, you know, that are happening now, whether it be EnviroCan, EnviroGanic certified through SC Labs, and now just EnviroCan. Up here, there's, you know, I think Clean Green certified's everywhere. Kind certified is another one. I can't remember. But anyway, they're basically utilizing these same, you know.
Got it. That's very smart.
So then we had that done. And basically, I had a dispensary in Portland. It was named Calyx's, you know, back when I don't even know if at that moment I knew what a bract was, what the scientific etymology of the, I thought it was a calyx, you know, and you realize the calyx is just the sheath that's, you know, you're like, I swear I knew. No, I don't even play that game. It's all these, you know, it's just like terpenes. Who was talking about terpenes in 2012, 2015? It was, oh, it smells really good. It was like,
I remember Robert Carr correcting me when I said calyx to leaf ratio. It's not calyx to leaf ratio. It's bract to calyx, right?
Bract to leaf ratio, right?
Right, exactly. Thank you. I didn't even
remember.
Yeah,
I was corrected too. And I was just like, I don't care. It's a, you know, some terms, people, every single person in herb knows what you're talking about when you say
Are we
calyx.
Ever going to get over indica and sativa? Question. Will we ever stop calling it indica and sativa?
Right? I doubt it.
I doubt it too. I actually doubt it.
But it was a really cool experience because that store was, you know, it was a really, in a really beautiful time in Oregon at this interim of medical and rec when we basically had this full free for all, you know. So medical herb was able to be inputted into the, you know, medical dispensaries and rec dispensaries, and there was this whole, how do we do this? We're learning how to do this. And I was doing a lot of work with the government in Oregon at that time. I was on multiple rules advisory committees and things like that. I even on the first one that I was put on, it was on the testing panel, and I was working with Alec Dixon from SC Labs. He was my confidant info guy, because, you know, we're really close friends. And he was telling me, you know, all these different pesticide realities. And, you know, so I was basically working with OHA at that time. And, you know, I even tried to get glyphosate put on the list, the banned pesticide list. And Tom Burns was the head of Oregon Health Authority at that time. He's all, why would you put glyphosate on here? I had it like number 17 down the list. So I was hoping nobody'd see it, you know?
Why would you ask why?
And he's all like, this is an herbicide. It shouldn't be on here. I said, it should be on there because it should be on there. He's all, no. And then later I realized that he was on the founding board of glyphosate, you know? Yeah, he was on the chemical, like, I'm not really sure the entanglement of it, but I just heard he was on the board that founded that.
We know not what we do.
Anyhow, so, you know, and now we understand that, man, you can't even eat honey, really.
No, bread. Because they've taken away bread. Bread, people used to live on bread because it used to be a nutritional thing. And now bread is poison. you know?
It's crazy. And you see all these people with different intolerances from, right. you know, it's all gluten intolerance. I think it's aggregate, all glyphosate.
It's all the aggregate toxicity of all the air and the food and the water. And go on, you know, just keep on not believing in, you know, global warming and, you know, and whatever.
Yeah, no.
You know, the thing that frustrates me is personally is that knowing all these things and not having an answer, like, you know, that's what frustrates me is that you can easily know these things. Like I said, you know that eating McDonald's every day will kill you. So nobody does that. They might eat it once a week. They might eat it twice a week. Some people eat it three or four, but they don't eat it every fucking day because they know. But, you know, it's like, so there is a limit of the blinders, right? It's not complete. You know it's bad. You just do it anyways. You know that it will actually kill you if you do it that much. So how come we have such a blinders on such a magnificent plant that can bring so much,
you know? I think it's all greed, honestly, because, yeah. I mean, for the last however many years, talking about scaling organics, talking about all this, yield, everyone's like, well, can you get this much? Can you get this much per square inch? Can you get this much per square foot? Can you get this? It's like, how much per light? It's like, for sure with organics, I haven't cracked the code to get the same or more as someone can do with conventional chemicals. I haven't yet, but I can get 75%, 80%. Even maybe 90% of that.
Sometimes.
And it's going to be organic, you know, sometimes, but not every, it's not as manufactured. It's not as, and I ask everyone, what's the main reason you're growing with salts? What's the main factor? Is it because you like it better? It tastes better. You feel good. Or is it for yield? So then if it's for yield, then we can just be honest about it. It's hard. You know, people don't want to say they're being greedy, but greed has a range, you know. Minor greed isn't that bad, but it's still, if you're doing something for...
I'm greedy. You know, it gets me in trouble every time. Since I turned to tent growing, I have not managed to lower my... I overgrow it every time. And I swear to you, John... To Kyle, I swear to you right here this time, my next grow is going to be so metered so that I can walk around it and take a picture on any side of it, and I can spray it properly when I need to do my IPM. And then at the end, it's not filled up to the roof where I'm worried about the PM and all this stuff.
Or you have to take plants out to even work.
So again, you see, there's different levels to greed. And am I hurting anybody else? No. I'm only hurting myself, but it's my inability to just check myself.
So well, thank we have to you. Survive.
Thank
we have to
you.
Survive, though, you know. And that survival means that we have to make the means of what it costs to do this thing and still make a living at whatever way we're doing it, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of people, they're not even taking that calculation or looking at that formula. They're just saying, hey, we heard you can't get as much as organics, and this particular cultivator doesn't even know how to do organics anyway. And so they're just going to do something simple, which we all understand conventional, you know, cultivation of any type is easier. It's easier in the sense that you can give someone that doesn't know what they're doing a program, and if they follow it right, they'll
right.
get this particular thing.
You can not look at your plants for 3-4 days at a time, easy, maybe even a week if you set it up right, and you can go do other things. And is that bad? Does that make you a bad person? No, of course not. Are you still providing a service to somebody maybe who can't grow their own? Sure you are. But we're hoping
Is it a healing medicine? That's where the debate comes in, though. Because, you know, they do say, like, oh, it's better to eat vegetables than no vegetable, you know, conventional vegetables than no vegetables at all, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I understand the concept of that philosophy. But for me, you know, personally, I'm so sensitive that I can't do certain things. I can't eat terrible foods. I can't eat regular meats. You know, I have, it's I, if I do,
do
I start to feel
too.
really Yeah, exactly. As I'm aging, you know, when I was in my early 20s, nothing mattered. I can party all night. I can do whatever. I didn't even have a hangover, you know?
So do you think that maybe actually age just plays a significant part in, meaning that the overwhelming number of consumers, percentage-wise, you know, obviously, you know, it's like, maybe not. You know, they say 72% of Americans now, between 67 and 72% of Americans have used, occasionally use, except cannabis. You know, I just wonder if it's just age. Like, you know, when we were younger, we ate a lot more fast food too. And then you learn that it's not good for you. And maybe, you know, okay, I got a campaign. We need to start some kind of a crazy campaign to get a jar of organic weed into the hands of every cannabis user.
That would be amazing.
So they can live with it, right? You know, I don't know.
It takes a certain amount of awareness, actually. And awareness comes with age, but also awareness comes with being cleaner in your body. Awareness comes with just your own setup. Myself personally, when I was in my early 20s, I was really mercury toxic because I was doing a lot of alpine, you know, alpineering and kind of climbing and a lot of the mountains around here. And I was eating a lot of tuna and I had amalgam fillings and I had these headaches that were like every day, all day, to the point where I didn't even want anyone near me. I was just had this, you know, like kind of Asperger's even people thought I had. And, you know, and then I went to this doctor and he's all, dude, you got 49 parts per million mercury in your body. And that's 17 times the safe amount. He's all, how did you get that? And your candida is like exploding because of that. That's why you feel this way. That's why you're sick. And once I basically got all the amalgam fillings out, dude, I started doing these chelations, glutathione and DMPS, this chemical that chelate all the heavy metals out. I'm not kidding. Within the first chelation, my headache went away. And then they never came back. And I just kept chelating it all out. I got all the fungal stuff under control. And stopped eating fast food, stopped eating bad food, started trying to focus all organic. And that evolution, what I realized is the brain fog went away, the cloudiness, the irritability, all these certain things just phased away.
All those things you said, you don't even realize when you're younger. You know,
no.
Irritability and cloudy, you know, you're not going to notice any of that stuff when you're younger. You just figure that's the way it's supposed to be.
For sure. But when you're doing high level athletics or trying to, you know, climb, you know, walls in Yosemite, or you're, you know, doing these different things, surfing, this kind of thing, you realize that the relationship with your vehicle is very important. And back to my first teacher, Armando, out of Peru, he told me, he's all, man, he's like, you have to understand what kind of fuel your vehicle needs. And until you do, you'll never be able to have optimum awareness. Right. And so
is fuel, I was for sure.
And
the food that you give your plants is the fuel for your plants. Absolutely.
Exactly. So really that all bleeds into this intentional horticulture, that once we start to have awareness of all the aspects of ourself, why would we not do that for the plant? And vice versa, because we're ingesting it, why would we feed this plant things that are toxic if we're going to be taking it in?
If you're a little lazy, like I have unfortunately become in my old age, just grow in big pots.
Dude, that's what I do. You know? It's, you don't have to water it as much. You don't have
right.
to feed it. You can just throw some top dress on there, exactly. Throw some castings.
And if you got, you know, if all of a sudden two plants look like they might need water, but you don't feel like making up a batch, just wait another day or two. They're probably fine. Then water them all. You got a big pot. You'll be fine.
Or just spot water them. Give them a half gallon or gallon.
You see, you've got options. You've got options, my friend. That's what I'm talking about. Well, look, before we get out of here, we got to get a little practical. So I want to pick your brain for a little bit of insight. So what are some of the key organic inputs that you consider essential for people who are thinking about going that way, making the switch, or just augmenting?
Well, first of all, you have to have a good biome, right? So you have to have a good enzyme and probiotic product, you know,
We're
whether
not
you
going from
cultivate that
inert.
yourself.
We're getting away from inert now. We have to get into a living situation.
Exactly. And, you know, it depends on what your resources are, but a lot of the times, worm castings are going to have everything you need because they're going to have worm larvae in there. You can introduce all these little your little soldiers in there to do all the work for you, make everything
Some
really
Red
easy.
Riddlers? Put some Red Riddlers in there.
But like also like, you know, EM or Micro Plus from Bokashi Earthworks, these kind of products that are, you know, the way I looked at it is it's like your gut biome. You're trying to what I realize is that it's the same in the earth. Enzymes, probiotics, carbon,
And look, you
sugars.
know, I found that there's products for everything nowadays. And there's products specifically, I was scrolling the other day, Build a Soil. They have these packets. It's got all the prebiotic, probiotics, crushed volcanic, gypsumite, leonardite, bendonite, langbingdonite, all that stuff in one bag. And they go, oh, this is for 5 cubic feet, or you're all set, man. There's no reason not to.
Exactly, and it's so easy. Like once you start using gypsum, langbeinite, you know, your probiotics. Like we have a, you know, me and Brandon Rust, we have a top dress product that we've collabed. You know, and basically you get a little bit of these, you know, things in there, but then you start to add wherever you're getting your carbon, protein sources from, and then they can be metabolized quickly. And people don't understand how quick the organic response is when you throw a top dress in there. If you do have a live biome, I mean, within a week you're seeing the results if you one, two waters in. So, I mean, really, it's really
I happen
simple
to
just throwing.
use I'm not I'm I use organics alive. I had to find a nutrient
Not
that's, you know, a
sick.
stable bottled nutrient that, you know, when
Love
Vegan
those
Matrix
guys.
went by the wayside. And man, I'll tell you, there's no doubt, you know, I do a pretty hard cycling. And you know, so I go right to the point where they're, you know, I'm ready to load it up again. And when I change my formula, you know, when I go from a second week formula to a third week formula or something like that, and I pound it because I know it's ready to be pounded, oh, I can tell right away, 20 minutes after loading that soil up with 3.5 gallons of water, you know, if they don't like it, they're not going to go and just unfurl and pray to the Ganja goddess. You're going to have some crinkling and some,
The
there's
cringy
a.
stuff.
Right. So, yeah,
I
man.
mean,
So.
I think that's the thing with organics is you can really, if you don't know what you're doing, you can really mess things up because a lot of people want to just give more. And if you give more in organics, there's no taking it out. You know, you it's there, and you have to flush a lot of water through that to get it gone. And so I think really
So
the
people take it
titration
very
levels.
incrementally, slowly, right? You know, I
Exactly.
remember when I was literally first making my nutrients out of bubbling sacks of guanos. You know, this is in 1988, 87,
Oh, sick.
89. Like I said, before there was no stores there, you know, I just you know, and I start with 1 cup per gallon and then go up to 2. I realized that I could put like a half a gallon of the bubbling brew per gallon. Many, you know, and because I wanted to find out, you had to find when you get the burn, when you, or how I know if I'm
Totally.
giving enough. So yeah, organics is a learning curve, but nowadays you have a lot of tools on the tool shelf to back you up. And
Well, also a
you
lot
have
of
some
people that will share information with you freely,
like
you
us.
know? Hey.
And you have some products out too as well. You have some NPK nutrient products out as well, don't you?
Yeah, with like I was saying with Bokashi Earthworks, Brandon Russ and I did a little collab together. You know, the flowering product is with coffee ground ash and then sunflower ash, and then the veg product is with, you know, bone, blood, feather meal, the other things
Stuff's
in
not
there,
going
the
to be tasting
classic.
like seaweed, I promise.
But plus, you know, we kind of got to eliminate a lot of these sea products now because of the heavy metals and things like that. So getting your things from gypsum, langbeinite, these other things that, you know, you can get these,
Organic
the
sources.
potassium, calcium,
Exactly.
you know.
That's what it's all about, people. That's what it's all always been about for me. The whole Vegan Matrix run for me was about the fact that I had heavy metal levels in the parts per billion. before anybody else did. Okay? It's not easy to grow a product with heavy metals in the parts per billion. You have to source your inputs very carefully. Parts per million is the, everybody grows, even a synthetic weed comes in the parts per million sometimes. But there's a big range. Do you understand the difference between being a millionaire and being a billionaire? Like, you know, you can spend all your money if you've got a few hundred million. You got a few hundred billion? You can't spend all your money. So it's all about the heavy metals. If, you know, for the people who are still listening, you know, a lot of people taper off at the end of podcasts and stuff. For you people who are still listening, it's all about the heavy metals, because that's the thing that you can't flush out of either the plant or your body without extreme measures, as you were talking. And totally.
Especially with this plant being a like atmospheric detoxifier, where it's going to extract all that stuff out of the atmosphere and the soil and bind it up, because it's trying to, you know, in my opinion, trying to purify everything. You know, got to be really careful about that stuff.
So we got to get out of here pretty quick. But I do want to ask you one more question before we go to Kyle's Tiles. I don't know if you know what that is yet. I'll explain it in a minute. But, you know, looking forward, are there any, other than hopefully more people go organic, are there any other trends in the commercial space that you hope to influence moving forward or anything like that?
Yeah, right now we're focused really mainly on genetics and kind of providing high-level genetics.
Super
important. Meaning high-level meaning, you know, hop latent free, clean, elite genetics and combined with a lot of
cannabinoid foundational, diverse.
Exactly. And so really trying to offer this to the mainstream public through licensing, through different aspects of, you know, basically from gbgenetics.com, our webpage, and, you know, we're working with Seedsman, Pure Sativa, Attitude, all these guys that are really just great and helping the wave happen and get these out, but really hoping that we can kind of transform the industry right now that's basically stuck on these kind of purple, you know,
supposedly 32 and 34% THC. Do you?
I mean, you remember legit. How it was back in the day. It was really rare that we're pulling the purple weed out to smoke. You know, there was a couple strains, whether it be like Soma's Lavender or these certain strains from back in the day that I did like, but mainly I was not smoking those. I was, you know, shooting for more terpenylene, osamine, humulene based stuff. That's kind of, now people are like, well, that smells kind of like Jack. You know, you're like, okay. why would that be a problem versus everything super mercine rich, you know? But the fact is that now we're starting to see the reintroduction of sours, OGs, the chems, and people are like, oh my God, this is the herb we've been looking for. Not this whatever, you know, renamed, you know, gelato cross.
Cookie that's run, renamed gelato, 15 times. All American, you know? Reject My Chemical Romance shit. I just ask for the hate mail, don't I?
But we're on the same page here, though. Yeah, you know? Like, man. We really, you know.
Look, I came up with a funny statement I thought would have made a great bumper sticker for NorCal. It said, "Bad attitude, wrong strain." You got to find the right strain, man. Don't think that the way that feeling high is the ultimate expression of cannabis, because there's a lot of colors in between the colors. And
totally. I mean, there's some strains that'll make you have a panic attack. And in that same strain, if you're in a good life space, will make you feel extremely euphoric.
Absolutely.
But if you're depressed.
Well, like I said, we could keep talking. I love the deep connection that we have when we talk about this plant. It's really special. So Kyle's Tiles is this this bit that we came up with because my wife, she gave me a birthday present this year. and it's a king size blanket. We sent in the favorite fronts and backs from all the old t-shirts that I've been saving for decades. And so it's basically my career on a t-shirt. And so in a minute, I'm going to say cue the music, and you're going to see a bunch of the squares going by, and you're just going to, when you let it run for a second, you're just going to say gua, like the old whammy thing, and that's going to stop it, and then we're going to tell a story about what tile it stopped on, okay?
For sure, solid.
All right, you ready? Cue the music. Emerald Cup 2015. That was a long time ago. I literally think that was, if I'm not mistaken, my name's actually on the back of that shirt, because that was the only one that I ever actually appeared at. I was on a panel with Ed Rosenthal and I believe Dave Crockett from Crockett Genetics.
That's Dragonfly Earth Medicine too.
Dragonfly Earth Medicine was there. And yeah, we were all on that panel together, and that's interesting because it always seems like there's another Emerald Cup coming up. They have another one coming up pretty soon.
I think so. I think I was on a panel at that one with like Aaron from DNA. I think Adam Dunn. You know,
yeah.
Chimera.
That might have even been the next year, because I went like 3 years in a row at that point, and then haven't been since. You know what I love about the Emerald Cup is, because it's not anymore. It's in Oakland this year, but it's still NorCal. They consider Oakland NorCal. But when it was up at Santa Rosa Fairgrounds, like being in like the heart of Mendocino, it really felt like that Mendo love. And it was so easy for a lot of the corporate cannabis still got in, but it was a lot easy for a lot of the real, just the heartfelt growers to get in. And there's so much organicness up there and so much. Oh, I really love the Emerald Cup, man.
Well, for all the heads to connect and actually connect down a really personal level, I don't think there's not been another place like that, in my opinion, to where we can all relate and connect with the top heads in the industry on a real human, face-to-face, friend level. That place offered something sweet and special for sure.
Man, I really hope they can pull it off in Oakland. I don't know if I can be there. I'm going to try, as like I always say. I really hope they can pull it off in Oakland. They have a new venue there. I know it's not the Cow Palace. I don't know where it is, but it's not the Cow Palace. And so let's wish them well, and I hope they pull that off. And Bodhi, I want to wish you well, and thank you for sharing what you did with us today. And I want to wish you and yours a really well, a happy weekend. And I'm going to come visit you when I pull off this latest crop, and I'm going to smoke you out, because the last time I got smoked out by somebody with weed that like your quality, I can't even remember it. It was way up in Mendo, like over 10 years ago, you know? So I'm going to come visit you, bring some of my weed and have stay overnight. And we're going to have a reunion.
You're always welcome.
Awesome, brother.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. And thanks so much for everything. And really, this has just been an honor, and it always is. And it's always cool to share our experience, especially with legends as yourself. It's just really, you know, grateful. And really, thank you.
Who knows, a couple of years ago, we're just hanging out at an event in New York. And the next thing you know, we're on this high-rising, new, highly interesting podcast.
For sure.
I love you, brother. Thanks for being on. Well, folks, we've reached the end of a truly transformative session here at Grow Weed at Home. I hope your hearts and minds are as full as your future harvests will be, all thanks to the enlightened insights from John Bays, the mind behind Green Bodhi. Knowing where your intentions lie can truly change the course of your cultivation journey, and perhaps even the way you view the world. Remember that we've learned together, growing top quality cannabis goes far beyond the soil. It's about the deeper connections we establish with each plant, the mindful practices we integrate into our daily routines, and the intentions that guide our every action. John has shown us that when we grow with purpose, we don't just cultivate cannabis, we cultivate a richer life. And let's not forget the wisdom imparted by Jim Belushi last episode. His dedication to the craft, his community, and the healing powers of this plant set the stage for today's deep dive into intentional horticulture. As we part ways, I encourage you all to reflect on the values that drive your grow. Whether it's compassion, healing, or simply the pursuit of excellence, let your unique intention shine through in everything you do. Take a leaf out of Green Bodhi's teachings, care for your crops, but also care for your community and the environment that surrounds us. After all, the true essence of cultivation lies in nurturing growth, both in our gardens and within ourselves. Thank you, John, for sharing your journey with us, for inspiring change, and for reminding us that every seed planted has the potential to bloom into a better tomorrow. To my listeners, keep those questions coming and stay tuned for more green growing journeys. Until next time, I'm Kyle Cushman saying keep those intentions clear, your garden's greener than ever. Keep growing, keep strong, grow wise, and most importantly, grow with love. Peace and plants, my friends.
Are you ready to take your cannabis cultivation game to the next level? Well, hold on to your buds because we have an amazing offer just for you. Are you familiar with Strawberry Cough? This legendary strain has delighted cannabis enthusiasts worldwide with its mouthwatering flavor and uplifting effects. Lineage? Sure, let's dive into it. Strawberry Cough is a delicious cross between Strawberry Fields and Haze. Its distinct strawberry aroma and sweet taste make it a favorite among connoisseurs. Now, here's the exciting news. We're offering a fantastic deal on Strawberry Cough feminized cannabis seeds. You'll receive 20% off your purchase on any pack size of these seeds when you use code COUGH20. That's COUGH20. That's COUGH20 at homegrowncannabisco.com. Don't miss out on this incredible opportunity to grow your own Strawberry Cough. Whether you're a seasoned cultivator or a newbie looking to explore the world of marijuana horticulture, these feminized seeds will set you on the path to aromatic success. Visit homegrowncannabisco.com today and select from their wide range of premium cannabis seeds, and maybe take advantage of 20% off your Strawberry Cough seeds when using code COUGH20. Happy growing, folks! Get ready to savor the tantalizing flavors and uplifting effects of Strawberry Cough, a strain that deserves a spot in every cannabis enthusiast's garden. Check out homegrowncannabisco.com now and seize this offer before it's gone.